Welcome to the Freedom Report, broadcasting from Alexandria, Virginia. Welcome to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson. Who's Austin Peterson?
Liberty champion Austin Peterson, this Justin Bieber lookalike, and a powerful advocate for liberty.
Who's Austin Peterson? I'm an American. I love life, liberty, and family, but I'm not a conservative. I'm a hardcore libertarian. What am I doing here? I'm trying to restore the republic. The Libertarian Republic is a website aimed at furthering the ideas of economic freedom and personal liberty. I don't really care about parties. All I care about are ideas. And the one idea I care the most about? Freedom! That's right, pure freedom on the Freedom Report podcast.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Report. I'm your host, Austin Peterson, here with my associate editor, Ian Hewitt. Ian, welcome back to the show.
Good to be here.
Very exciting. We've been having so many downloads of the podcast lately. We just want to say thank you very much to our listeners. The other day, we had a show that was downloaded over 210,000 times. That is just absolutely mind-blowing. I mean, we were so excited to be getting 18,000 people a download, which is like filling out Madison Square Garden. But now we're getting some the kind of numbers that the top show on iTunes is getting. It's very exciting. I mean, this is the kind of thing that gets Ian and I up in the morning excited because we know that we're talking to a huge audience, and we just want to say thank you very much for being a listener to the Freedom Report podcast. We think you keep coming back because we're hitting the right topics at the right time, and hopefully you guys are going to like what we're talking about today. We think it's a very important subject. We're talking about the issue of the Constitution and how it deals with the establishment of religion. Now, I want to read to you first the First Amendment of the United States, and then I'm going to talk about the news, because I think that there's this story is that came out recently from a Supreme Court decision has got people very confused, especially liberals who are always confused about the Constitution. But it's got a lot of people confused about how the Bill of Rights works, how it applies to people in the United States, and specifically the question of the separation of church and state. And just to set this up real quick for you guys, just so you know, I am a secular humanist. I don't believe in God, and I am the host of this show, but I'm a libertarian, and I don't let my views on religion or theism interfere with my belief in the basic rights of humanity, what I call the natural rights of humanity. My colleague here, Ian, he's very much a conservative libertarian Christian, and he believes in Jesus. He's of the salvation through Jesus Christ, and we both find ourselves coming down on the same side of the issues when it comes to, I think, issues like separation of church and state. We may have some differences of opinion on certain things, but I think what's important is that people in America who have differing opinions like this can come together and have an honest and open discussion rather than that cuts through.
Our worldviews are different, but we arrive at the same policy positions.
Right.
And that's important because in our policy outlook, we affirm our right to have different worldviews and to act on those worldviews in different ways.
Right. That my worldview doesn't mean that I think that somebody should come along and club Ian on the head and force him to conform to my worldview. But let's just read the First Amendment of the United States. A beautiful wording. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. That's all about freedom of speech. Now, this is the question that has been thrown out by, this is a secular progressive humanist blog, which is obviously terrifying sounding in its face. Constitutional horror. Clarence Thomas argues states cannot establish official religion. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas argues states may establish an official state religion and sees no problem with an individual state making Christianity the official state religion. Thomas believes that the First Amendment's Establishment Clause does not apply to the states. The Establishment Clause is that part of the First Amendment that says Congress shall make no law respecting establishment of religion. This is what Michael Stone's argument is. Now, remember, this is not necessarily the truth. The Establishment Clause not only forbids the government from establishing an official religion, but also prohibits government actions that unduly favor one religion over another or none. Thomas believes the Establishment Clause, quote, probably prohibits the federal government from establishing an official national religion. He sees no problem with the individual state establishing an official state religion. In the recent disastrous Supreme Court ruling that found Christian prayers used to open government meetings to be constitutional, Thomas went further than his other conservative colleagues in condoning sectarian prayers at government functions. In his dissenting opinion, Thomas disputes the widely accepted notion that the First Amendment's ban on the establishment of religion even applies to the state and local governments. Now, MSNBC summarizes Thomas's official opinion by saying, "If policymakers in your state chose today to establish Christianity as the official state religion, Clarence Thomas believes that would be entirely permissible under the First Amendment."
By MSNBC, by the way, they mean Rachel Maddow.
Right, of course.
But I think that this blog post offers a lot of insight, both in regards to Thomas's controversial statement here mm-hmm. and the issue of public prayer. So I saw a Facebook page the other day called, I think, The Atheist Republic.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's say, hypothetically, somewhere in the U.S., atheists said, we want to establish an explicitly atheist republic in this area. This community will affirm that we do not believe in God.
Mm-hmm.
I think that from a legal standpoint, that would be a remarkably positive development because it would allow for the creation of explicitly Christian communities
mm-hmm.
that can manage their own internal affairs and affirm Christian social ideas. Mm-hmm. It would be a marketplace,
right.
A political marketplace. What sure protection could there be for religious freedom? I think a lot of Christians would be right to get excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, a lot of people on the other side of the aisle wouldn't affirm that as a positive development and would say, no, you don't have the right to have an explicitly Christian community. And I think this blog shows us really why that's the case. Because when talking about public prayer, they quote from the majority opinion, Justice Anthony Kennedy wrote that it's okay for people to pray at public meetings as long as they do not coerce participation by non-adherence.
Mm-hmm.
And this blog, Progressive Secular Humanists, responds and says, no, Kennedy is wrong. If you're forced to endure prayer, then you are being coerced.
Right.
So really their perspective is, if someone is doing something I don't like with an earshot, that's aggressing upon me somehow.
Right.
People on the left and the right really have different political philosophies about what constitutes aggression. And I think that really underpins this debate here. If you're doing something I don't like, you're messing with me.
Right. Okay, so here's the thing. So I want to get the news item out here, make sure that everybody understands what the news is. So basically, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a decision on May 5th that was the town of Greece, New York versus Galloway. And basically, it upholded the constitutionality of non-coercive sectarian invocations at city council meetings, meaning that it's okay to have a Christian prayer at city council meetings, to open up a prayer with city council meetings, that is constitutional. And in the 5-4 decision, the Supreme Court upheld that was totally fine. So Justice Anthony Kennedy, who spoke for the majority, said, "The town of Greece does not violate the First Amendment by opening its meetings with prayer that comports with our tradition and does not coerce participation by non-adherence." He's absolutely right.
Right.
Because here's the thing. The problem here is, and as a secularist, as someone as a you know, devout atheist, I have to say that they're absolutely right. It doesn't violate the First Amendment for people to open a meeting with a prayer. Especially if the prayer is, or certainly if the prayer does not coerce participation, meaning that no one has to participate in the prayer. You know what I mean? And it's like, the problem here is that people are saying that, well, the government can't have a prayer at a government meeting, you know? And yesterday on our show, we talked about the Ten Commandments on being on the Oklahoma State Capitol. Now, the reason why I see a difference between the Ten Commandments at a state capitol at a courthouse versus this where there's a prayer being said at a city council, is that by having the Ten Commandments on the courthouse, that is an endorsement because it's a permanent establishment, I believe, of a religious viewpoint. By having these Ten Commandments on the courthouse inscribed in stone, it is to me an explicit endorsement. By having a sectarian prayer, that's the kind of thing that is like a wisp in the air to me. It's like, you know, someone can say whatever they want. If they want to have any, if they want to like to talk crazy talk, if they want to say, you know, the Lord's Prayer, and an atheist at the meeting can put his fingers in his ears and go, la, 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 I can't hear you, I can't hear you, I can't hear you. And that's his free speech, right? He can be a jerk if he wants to.
Well, I think the libertarian perspective should always be to favor more decentralization.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you had a state unanimously establish Christianity as its official religion,
mm-hmm.
I would favor, and libertarians should favor, mm-hmm. the state kicking that issue down to localities, mm-hmm. even if that would just mean, in this instance, all the localities establishing Christianity as their official religion. Mm-hmm. That would be a sure protection for the rights of the believers in those communities.
Well, I want to talk about federalism, too, mm-hmm. but before we get into federalism, I would really like to talk about the constitutional argument, which the liberals here are absolutely wrong about, and Clarence Thomas is absolutely right, that it is perfectly constitutional from an originalist perspective, that it is perfectly constitutional for the states to establish a religion if you believe in the interpretation of the Constitution. So what I mean by that is that the way that the Constitution was originally written, Ian knows this, and maybe some of our listeners do, but some for the benefit of the doubt, if you don't understand, the Constitution originally only applied to the federal government, meaning that you had the Bill of Rights, right? And so what that meant was you had your right to defend yourself, and you couldn't have your guns taken away, you couldn't have your free speech taken away. But those Bill of Rights did not apply to the states until the government began to use the power of the 14th Amendment to incorporate the Bill of Rights into the states.
And not during the Civil Rights Movement, but in the 1920s,
right.
Before then.
Right. And so what that means, ladies and gentlemen, is that if the states wanted to infringe on your rights, they certainly had the power to do so until we began to incorporate the Bill of Rights into the states, meaning that the federal law, the laws for free speech, the Bill of Rights, they did not apply to the states as they only applied to the federal government. That changed with the incorporation doctrine. Now listen to this. So prior to the ratification of the 14th Amendment and the development of the incorporation doctrine, the Supreme Court held in 1833 in Barron v. Baltimore that the Bill of Rights applied only to the federal, but not the current state governments. So even years after the ratification of the 14th Amendment, the Supreme Court, for example, in 1876, still held that the First and the Second Amendment did not apply to state governments. So what Clarence Thomas has said is true. If the states, to a certain point, understanding origination, if the states wanted to restrict free speech or if they wanted to take your guns, they had the right to do so because it was only the federal government that couldn't do it. But that has changed in recent years because now we have had selective incorporation of the Bill of Rights. So not all of the Bill of Rights have been incorporated into the states, but some of the Bill of Rights have. And I'll just give you a real quick summary. So the First Amendment has been incorporated against the states. So the guarantee against establishment of religion and the guarantee of the free exercise of religion has been incorporated. And I want you to deconstruct this. So I'm gonna break this down into two parts, Ian, and then I want to get your take on this.
Sure.
So the First Amendment has been incorporated against the states, meaning that it guarantees an establishment of religion. So the atheists have an argument here by saying that the states, it's been incorporated and that there's no establishment of religion. And so maybe the prayers could theoretically be in violation against an establishment of religion. However, the second clause is that the guarantees the free exercise of religion. So the people who are praying could have a constitutional argument that they have the right to freely exercise their religion, which they are doing. They're having a prayer at their city council. So can you tell me, Ian, what you think, what your argument is on the constitutionality of this?
First of all, let me just offer a quick moral argument for the importance of federalism for listeners that might be new to this issue. Mm-hmm. Look at any contentious issue that you have a strong opinion on, and if you make that a unitary issue and let it be resolved and decided by one central body for everyone, mm-hmm. the opposite of your perspective, the wrong decision, might be imposed everywhere. Mm-hmm. But if you decentralize it to a state or to a community level, some states and some communities will make, in your point of view, the right decision.
Remember when Tom Hartman, I argued with him, he agreed with that? He's like, oh yeah, it's fine if I impose my will.
The difference is that, yeah, Tom Hartman would support using federalism if that was the only way to have some places, you know, share his policy position.
Right.
Whereas you and I would allow other localities to make decisions we wouldn't agree with necessarily.
Right. Right.
So of course, the difference is that, as this progressive secular humanist blog indicated, the left-wing view of coercion is if you're somewhere doing something I don't like, it affects me magically, and I need to put a stop to it.
Right.
Now, as for the Constitution, I think that the establishment of religion phrasing could be an argument against Clarence Thomas's more controversial standpoint, but it's certainly not an argument against allowing public prayer in meetings, because that is not an establishment of religion. You're not coercing the people into participation.
Right.
It is, contrary to what this blog says, not coercion to just do something someone disagrees with within earshot of them. Otherwise, you coerced me earlier when you said you don't believe in God.
Right.
I had to endure that, quote unquote.
True, true. So
we
I
need
think,
to get the police in here.
Exactly. Call the cops.
Violated my rights.
Right. Now, the difference, obviously, is that I'm not a government official. I don't work for the government. We're not in a government building here. And, I think that I the knee-jerk reaction of liberals was that, you know, oh, these government officials are praying at a public meeting. And so that's, while they were probably offended by it, they tried to make it an argument that it was unconstitutional, which it clearly is not.
Well, why is it dangerous to have government, you know, imposing its religious views on people? I kind of answered my own question there. But the reason that that distinction exists is so that government can't impose its religious views on people, not so that people in government don't have religious views. This ruling is merely allowing people at public meetings to pray.
Right, and to be intellectually honest on this one, you know, I should say that I share the instincts of some of these liberals when it comes to the fear of a state establishment of religion. So I would not want the state of Virginia where I live to establish a state religion. I would oppose it. But that doesn't change the intellectual honesty of the argument that Clarence Thomas makes, that the federal government, from an originalist perspective, the federal government shall not interfere with the states respecting an establishment of religion. However, because the First Amendment has been incorporated into the states, or excuse me, against the states, that's a very important piece of terminology, against versus into, that means that the federal government does have purview over making sure that the states do not establish a state religion. So what I'm saying is that in theory, Clarence Thomas's argument from an originalist perspective is correct, that the federal, if the states wished from the original readings of the Constitution and the way that it was interpreted, the federal government had no say in making sure and stopping the states from establishing religion. However, Ian, today, based on an understanding of the 14th Amendment and the incorporation doctrine as it stands, the federal government now does have the power, and I think actually the mandate, to make sure that the states of the Union do not establish an official state religion. Now, does that mean that I think that people should not be able to establish to do prayers at town councils?
You're saying based on
absolutely
incorporation.
Not. Based on incorporation, the federal government now does have a mandate to make sure that the states do not establish a state religion. So according to modern standards, Clarence Thomas is incorrect based on an interpretation of the 14th Amendment and the incorporation doctrine. So
yeah, the legal argument is different from the moral one, as usual, but I think that the Supreme Court has made unconstitutional decisions.
Sure.
Judge Napolitano likes to point out the Commerce Clause has been twisted egregiously to effectively abolish federalism and strip local governments of all power. And that's just erroneously, obviously unconstitutional.
Right. Well, just because the Supreme Court has decided, it doesn't necessarily mean it's constitutional. Obamacare is another perfect example where we were basically being taxed for not doing anything.
Right.
So it's important, I think, to understand the constitutional arguments. Not everyone can become a constitutional scholar. You know, Ian and I we're not lawyers. We're not constitutional scholars. The closest I ever got was working for the judge, you know, and so I can't claim to be a public intellectual on the issue of the Constitution. I would defer to my betters on this one. However, I do have a strong opinion when it comes to the establishment of religion, and so I've studied this issue, and I think that if, for example, the state of Virginia were to try to establish a state religion, then that would be unconstitutional, according to the incorporation doctrine. But the difference between establishing a state religion in Virginia and having a prayer at a city council meeting is worlds apart. Absolutely worlds apart. So having a a prayer at a city meeting, I think, is not an establishment of religion. If the state of Virginia or the state of New York said, we establish the religion of Christianity as the official state religion, then I believe the federal government does have the ability to say no. And the reason is that because of not just the incorporation doctrine, but because the federal government has supremacy, the supremacy doctrine, in which it has the power to move against the states in which it has been given power to act. And certainly, I believe the 14th Amendment would give the government the power to act. What do you think about that?
Right. Yeah, I think from a legal standpoint, that's correct. From a moral one, again, I would consider that if Virginia could make itself an explicitly Christian state, you could also have, and I think would probably have in the near future, an atheist state somewhere.
Perhaps, which I would also oppose. I don't like the idea of it. We've seen atheist states in the past. They kill their own people. Communism killed 50 million people, and all we got was this lousy t-shirt.
Right. Well, those were atheist nations. But yes.
Yeah. Well, they call it states and nations. You know, there's a bit. That's going
to
be
interchangeable. Again, I would support the right of localities to make decisions I disagree with, mm-hmm. because that would be an affirmation mm-hmm. of my right to, in my locality, advocate for policies that I agree with.
Well, let's talk about federalism. Now we want to talk, have this discussion about federalism here, and I think that's really key, because I would oppose the state of Virginia being establishing Christianity as a state religion, or Islam as a state religion, or atheism as the state, well, I guess, would you call it religion? I don't know, the ethos. I would oppose that because I live here, and I would fight for it because I think that it's worth fighting for in the territory that you have. But the thing is that the reason we have a federation of states is that each states need to try certain things. Now, I don't live in California, but if I had a say in California's governance and they were trying to establish a Christian religion, I may, pull a Brendan Eich like Mozilla and donate $1,000 to the campaign to stop the state from becoming a Christian state or an atheist state. But
let's get a little bit hypothetical here.
Okay, let's do it.
Just imagine that somewhere, some township is unanimously Muslim, mm-hmm. and the people there all agree we are going to voluntarily submit to Sharia rulings mm-hmm. and have Islamic courts. Mm-hmm. I don't think that either of us could make a legal argument against their right to do that. Mm-hmm. So at what point is it intolerable? We would probably say it's more intolerable the more coercive it is. If someone's being forced to stay there, mm-hmm. is being forced to endure mm-hmm. this Islamic law, then we would be more and more opposed to it. Mm-hmm. Now, what's the way to minimize the amount of coercion that happens? Mm-hmm. The more you decentralize power, the more choices people have. You mm-hmm. can vote with your feet. There's a market for political solutions. Mm-hmm. So that's always what we should favor, I think.
Yeah, the problem is that with Sharia law comes the loss of classical liberal values such as the rights of women. And so, maybe I wouldn't necessarily fight it, tooth and nail, but I certainly would oppose it publicly. And
there's no classical liberal values in the current federal government, so I think the surest way to have places in the U.S. with classical liberal values tomorrow would be to decentralize power. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Some places would get more authoritarian, but some places would get more libertarian, mm-hmm. and people could move there.
Yeah.
And those places would produce better results. We mm-hmm. would see those policies mm-hmm. in action.
Sure, but I'm trying to play devil's advocate mm-hmm. here, but you can understand why people would oppose Muslims trying to impose Sharia law in certain communities, just because it would mean that there could be civil rights violations that would be basically quote-unquote legal.
Right, and, well, if you're concerned about your rights being violated, support safeguards against your rights being violated, mm-hmm. and that's what federalism does.
Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, well, what do you think, ladies and gentlemen? Another fascinating topic, another fascinating day. We just love talking to you guys. It's a huge audience now, and so we feel a certain amount of responsibility, Ian and myself, to produce a good show for you guys. So what do you think? Are we doing a good job? Send us an email. Go to thelibertarianrepublic.com. There's a button on the front page you can send us a tip. And also, we've been getting a lot of feedback from our users about the new mobile version. Certain things have worked, certain things haven't as we've rolled out the new version. So if you have problems using the site, or if it's a little slow or things like that bother you, send us a screen capture of any problems you might be having. We're still trying to work out the bugs. Also, we've got some exciting news. LibertyViral.com, our long-awaited project, is almost here. Probably about another 4 to 6 weeks before it comes out, but it's going to look great when it comes. We just approved the design and the logo, and we think that you're really going to love it. It's going to be a big, exciting new project that's going to unite more people across the United States than I think that that you guys are even going to recognize. So I just want to say, again, thank you very much for listening to Freedom Report Podcast. If you haven't already, subscribe to us on iTunes. You can also get us on Stitcher if you don't have an Apple computer. and come back every single day to your home for economic freedom and personal liberty at thelibertarianrepublic.com.